You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Page to Stage,
a conversation with theater makers.
We're your hosts.
That's Brian.
And that's Mary.
This episode is part of our series on Chicken and Biscuits, a new play by Douglas Lyons.
And it's the second half of our conversation with last week's guest. If you haven't already, go back and listen to part one.
We hope you enjoy this episode.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
With this particular show, Chicken and Biscuits, the actors are going up and down the aisles throughout the play constantly. What responsibility does that put on you guys, front of house?
Make sure that they don't run into the audience. Like, a lot of times it's no, you have to, like, it's just making sure that the path is clear. Most of the time we get it. We don't always get it. Like, Norm has definitely met some fans. But you can't run into anybody. And also making sure that, like, that the ushers know where the cues are so they're not running into people. The first couple preview, you know, and people do it all the time in our theater because we have these fabulous aisles and you can light them and you can do all this stuff. So very, on most shows, we did it Once in the Silent, the first couple previews are, it's the learning track. And the one thing I always tell people is, you know, by the time you get to first preview, the actors have had tech, the crew has had tech, everybody's had tech except for the front of house. And we're like, here's a show, here's 700 people, don't mess up and make it all run perfectly. So there, that to me is always an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up because it's so interesting because it is the audience is really getting a full experience having the front of house staff there. Especially, I remember walking in and seeing the ushers with their church robes and, you know, whatever those, the bibs, I don't know what to call them, but they're completing the experience and it's the whole theater going experience. It's pretty brave that, you know, you guys don't have that, you know, preparation going into it. And that's good to keep in mind from now on, walking into first preview.
And this is like, again, and I don't mean to keep harkening back to COVID because I know we all want to talk about anything but COVID. This was also like leading up to the first preview. We had to put in this entire protocol of getting people in and like leading up to the first preview. We're like, well, we think it's going to work. Like, we put all the pieces in, but we didn't know if we were going to go up at 8. I think it was probably, no, it was 8 o'clock curtain. We didn't know if we were going to go up at 8:10 or 9:10 because we'd never tried that particular thing before. And it was, I think it was like around 8:11 or 8:12.
I was going to say, I remember as we were, you know, told, you know, Broadway's reopening dates and the conversation, at least in my circles, was like, you know, no one knows how long this is going to take to load, you know, patrons in. No one knows, like, if it's going to have to be a very, like, one-on-one, you know, in terms of, like, showing your ID. No one knew if it was going to take a long time. But I feel like we were in, like, very quickly. I mean, it was all very safe and it was all very organized.
Thank you. I love you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, kudos to everybody that is working so hard to check all those IDs and vaccinations to make everybody feel safe. And I'm actually wondering if we could actually just, you know, pull over on the subject for a second, because I'm always interested to know, how does that coordination and orchestration work? You know, you got the stage managers asking, is everything okay in the house, right, to start the show? How does that work and how had it been working at Chicken and Biscuits with getting the show up and running as quick as possible?
Well, everybody's on walkie, so we have people up at the top. We also, you know, we have the two levels. So you have what's going on entering the box office lobby, coming down a level, and then what's going on in there. And it's really just everybody's good at their job. They know what they're supposed to be doing. They're getting the people in. They're coming downstairs. We're all on walkie, and somewhere around 8 o'clock, I say, "How we doing?" And, you know, "We're great. We've got a huge line," whatever the answer is. And then probably around on this show, 8:03, 8:04, I would start talking to stage management and say, "Okay, it looks like 3 minutes. It looks like 10 minutes. You can take it in 60, whatever it wound up being. So it's really just that part just kind of irons itself out. And you can tell too. Like, you can tell when an audience is ready to sit down and enjoy the show and when they're still kind of mulling.
And would you say that is like pretty on par with like anything pre-COVID? Because yeah. I feel like, I mean, you guys don't have like a concession stand. Do you have like a merch? Oh, you do have a concession stand. Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Okay. Because I feel like a concession stand often like is what slows it all down. I mean, it's very important. Everyone loves the themed drinks and, you know, if they need a snack or whatever. But I feel like oftentimes like it can deter people from getting to their seat when they need to.
Yes. Although, I mean, I will say we have our bartenders pretty fast. And like once people start hearing bells, they're like, "I don't care. Pour me a big glass of wine. I'm good. Thank you." I know I talked about this before, but I like the fact that it worked both on the show side and on the house side, because the house is a whole different kind of show. It really is.
I bet. And I'm sure it's different every single night, by the minute even.
It is. And you have so many unknown factors. It's really neat. Plus, the other thing that I always love, like our ushers on this show, they love the show. Like literally we had people dancing in the aisles and like they would be handing out playbills and they would like be rocking and rolling. But it's also what everybody always forgets is nobody talks to the audience more than ushers. Like they do, they sit there, they talk about the show, they talk about their life, you know, they know who's coming to the show. It's really an interesting dynamic because I feel like we spend a lot of time in like focus groups and all of that and advertising and marketing, but you also, the people who are actually talking to the people coming to the show, it's always your front of house staff. I've had people come up to me and tell me, like, I'll say, "Hi, how are you?" And they've told me their entire life stories and how they wound up at this show.
I love that, even just from like theater goer to theater goer. I love sitting down next to somebody at the theater, and I don't usually initiate a conversation, but if somebody does, I'm more than happy to talk to them about why they're there that night. You know, what have you seen recently? I think it's, and the ushers, like you said, it's always really exciting. And I love hearing people ask, "Oh, so what other shows have you ushered?" It's mm-hmm. just, you know, that's probably the most common question.
Yes. And most people who work front of house absolutely love the theater. In a passionate way. And they love watching the show every single night.
Maybe a little bit differently to then like your traditional proscenium arch theater. You know, you could be ushering like house right, you know, one night and have a completely different experience, similar to an audience.
Yeah.
And also you have different cues for, you know, different entrances and exits that you might not have, or that you definitely won't have coming from like a house left situation. Do you use that terminology, house right and house left? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
The second time I saw Chicken and Biscuits, there were so many audience members that showed up after the play began.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I found that even with Broadway coming back, that has been one of the biggest struggles that I've noticed in terms of like going to see a show and then having people walk in front of you or make a lot of ruffling noises and stuff. And so I'm just wondering from your perspective, because I kind of loved the, you know, a couple of years ago, there were a couple producers that really were sticklers about putting on the tickets, no late entry into the theater. I'm wondering how you feel being on the like front of house side, how you feel about like a policy like that being put in place for a production.
If I'm going to be completely honest, I think it's hard for this on the theater goer, because what happens is let's say that you're the person going to the theater and you bought your tickets, and let's say you spent, if it's just a couple, let's say you spent around $300. Let's say you're bringing a family though. Okay. So let's say you spent what? At the bare minimum, $500 on your tickets, probably more. And you're driving in, you had to get two kids into the car, and you get in the car and you finally drive into the city. And then because you never drive into the city, you hit Lincoln Tunnel traffic at 5 o'clock, and your journey takes you an hour longer than you thought. You then pay $60 to park your car, and you come to the front door of the theater to be told, "I'm sorry, you can't go in anymore." to me, I know, I believe me, I know. I've been like, are you really gonna unwrap that candy for 25 minutes while we all sit here and listen to it? Like, here, give it to me. I'll take it outside, I'll wrap it for you, and I will bring it back to you. But to me, I see a lot of that. It happens. The person who's late genuinely usually didn't mean to be late. So I kind of weigh it. I'm like, can I sneak them in an unobtrusive way so that they still, their evening is going to turn out to be a great one as opposed to just like this horrible, massive, disappointing thing.
Yeah, I totally get that. And I kind of just wish there was like a happy medium where, you know, there was like a back row that was reserved for late seaters. I think that that would be...
The way I try to look at it is I was like, what's going to cause the least amount of disturbance?
Yeah, totally.
And I try to do that.
I'm actually interested, since you started in the early 2000s, how you've seen the evolution of cell phone disturbances.
You know, there's more. I don't know what else. There's more. And it's also, it's become such a cultural thing. I will tell you, a lot of people don't think that they're doing anything wrong. Like you and I, we're so indoctrinated that we would never even have a cell phone on vibrate when we go to the theater. But again, a lot of people who are coming to theater, and especially you're talking to somebody who goes once a year, maybe twice a year, to them, it's not a big deal to check their text. No, it's a huge deal to us. It's balancing, okay, turn it off. No, really, we mean it. You're not allowed to. What's not cool is when like the people like pick it up and have a whole conversation and like, you know, that it's just not. So the evolution is it's gotten progressively worse. And how do we educate people in not an aggressive way? What I've never, ever, ever in my life, not to go off on a tangent, but you asked a house manager about cell phones. What, of course, this is going to happen. What I don't understand and have never understood is when you're doing this, you are entirely missing the experience that you paid upwards of $100 to enjoy. Like if I'm going to go to a restaurant and get a steak that costs $100, I'm going to eat every single morsel and I might lick the plate. So don't you want the same experience if you're coming to the theater? You're just ruining your own experience along with everybody else. Our theater, it makes it so much worse because we're in the round. So somebody pulls out a cell phone, you're lighting up half the audience.
And actually I always think whenever we like talk about like cell phone use in the theater, I'm always brought back to the first time that Freestyle Love Supreme came to Broadway, and I don't remember what it was called. It began with a
Yonder. Yonder pack.
Thank
Yonder.
You. Yeah, where like you put it in a pouch. I haven't actually experienced this, but like you put it in a pouch and then like they hold on to the pouch.
Some concerts do that. Yeah. No, I think you just can't unlock the pouch. You hold on to your device.
But what happens if they don't turn the phone off and then the phone goes off and you can't unlock the pouch?
Oh, okay. I believe you can't put it in without it being off.
Oh, and, yeah. Okay. I would hope so, because I feel like that would be like a front of house worst nightmare. Like they're holding onto this pouch for this phone that they can't turn off. I mean, that happened when we saw Chicken and Biscuits. There was someone right at the top of the show.
Oh my gosh.
It was like an alarm or something, and they couldn't figure out how to turn it off. And like,
it was a playlist. I think they were listening to their own Spotify playlist, and I thought that it was part of the sound design. I'm like, interesting. Okay, so they're still listening. They're still listening to the radio, and it's coming from over here in the audience. Yeah,
that's not for nothing though. Like and you know what I do for a living? I was at a play, and it wasn't a Broadway play. I don't know if it was a reading. I was at something, and I got in a new Fitbit. And I was like, I don't know, I was just fiddling with it. And somehow I turned my phone on and it started playing like Bon Jovi or something like super loud. And I was a person who was like rustling and like trying to turn it off. So that's what, sometimes it is just inadvertent, but not always. And what's frustrating is when you're like, no, turn it off. No, we mean it. Can you please just turn it off?
Yeah. Mary, do you want to move into our lightning round?
Yeah, let's do it.
If you could trade jobs with another member of the Chicken and Biscuits team for 1 week, who would it be and why would you want that position?
Norm Lewis, because he gave this incredible sermon that brought down the house.
What is one thing in the theater industry that confuses you?
People are enigmas. How about that? I've met some people where I'm like, I don't understand.
Is there something in your process that you find unique to you at Circle in the Square?
I think my hours. I think to me, it's really important to always have somebody around from the theater side of it to address problems. But I think my process is probably more intense than other people in my job's process. And I don't know if it's necessary, but it feels necessary to me.
What's one hobby that you have outside of theater?
Yoga and hiking.
I'm sure that came in real handy over the last 18 months or so.
Yes. I still do. I've gotten to the point, I do yoga every single day of my life. And I found that that helped navigate some of the turbulent waters that come along with what we do.
Are there any books or resources, podcasts even, that you have found helpful to you as you've been working, you know, specifically over the last 20 years?
I like to read biographies of people who have done this before. That's what I found most helpful because, number one, everybody's gone through a challenging time and everybody's come up with a creative solution. And like across the board, you know, Act One is a classic that I will read over and over and over and over and over. But I've read biographies of most actors that I admire and artists. And, yeah.
And then this is our final question, and it's a play on the tagline for Chicken and Biscuits. How has this process fed your soul?
There was such joy in the show, and it was so nice to be a part of something joyful after the past year and a half we've had. This show, like, it made people laugh. It was a wonderful show. I know I keep saying this over and over, but it was a wonderful show to work on after the pandemic. And the cast was joyous. They were generous. It was just lovely. The whole thing was lovely.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that we see more comedies. Because I think we were talking with Tony in the last episode, we were saying how there, you know, I feel like there was a lot of talk about that. Like, we as an industry were kind of like, coming out, it's going to be a lot of comedy. Like, that's what we're going to want to see. But we haven't really seen that too much. So hopefully, you know, in the next installment of, or the next season even of Broadway, that we're able to see some more lighthearted comedies that bring just pure joy to everyone involved.
Because, like, a well-done Broadway comedy, there is nothing in the world like it.
Right, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on here. And just to sidebar, Mary, about this series, I'm so proud that we were able to showcase so many jobs in the theater in this series that we hadn't had at all on the podcast.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting for us and our show. So.
Yeah, I love that you guys are doing this because there are so many people who work on a show who you never see, hear from, or meet, and they genuinely love theater too.
Yeah.
And it's all part of putting the same thing up. So I really love that you guys are doing it. It's so fantastic. I have to tell you, you guys are my first podcast. I was like, I don't want to talk to people. I'm afraid. And I love Leslie. And she's like, no. I literally, before we got on there, I was like, so are these people nice? Like, for real? I will show you the text.
And hopefully she said yes.
So I love, thank you so much. Like, I personally would like to thank you for doing
it. I'm so glad. Thank you.
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Page to Stage. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Page to Stage Podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we have other conversations with theater makers from Chicken and Biscuits.
Check them out.
Until next time.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
We'll see you later.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheatre.org. That's theater with an RiseTheatre.org, because only together we rise.